more than a decade, Saturdays and Illegal Curve have been synonymous with one another. With insight, analysis, and interviews regarding the Winnipeg Jets, the Manitoba Moose, and all around the NHL, here are Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now.
Good morning, Winnipeg! Good morning, Manitoba! For all those joining us live this morning on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. With Dave Minuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Hope everyone's having a very pleasant start to their Saturday morning. We're with you for the next couple of hours talking about everything to do with the Winnipeg Jets. It was a very newsy Friday for the Jets, and we'll get right into that momentarily. At the bottom of the hour, new Winnipeg Jets assistant coach Marty Johnston is going to join us. At the bottom of hour number two, new assistant coach for the Winnipeg Jets, Brad Lauer, is going to join us. It's a Jets-heavy Saturday, as you would come to expect here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave M., good to see you, my friend. Your head is on fire, and there's no other way I would have it be on a Saturday morning.
Well, I mean, it's going to be a scorcher again here in Manitoba, Drew, but the reality is it's been a scorcher all week in terms of Jets news. And just before we came on the air, we were talking about the fact that we appreciated the courtesy done for us by the Jets, signing three of their RFAs on Friday, so we would have plenty to talk about. And if we were actually going to be bereft of things to talk about, of course, the Matthew Tkachuk trade would be something that we could fill ourselves yeah, with. But we'll try and keep it Jets focused. That, of course, will be somewhat relevant to the Jets. But I mean, there has been it is crazy. Like I ended last night's tweet session on Illegal Curve talking about how it felt like anything other than a week in July. And I know obviously the NHL is still not on its regular schedule, so we're still dealing with, you know, the fact that everything is a little bit later than it traditionally is, but you wouldn't know it. You wouldn't know it based on how busy the website's been the last few months, for sure. And I just think that it's interesting times here in Manitoba and Jetsland, and we'll have plenty to discuss over the next couple of hours.
We absolutely will have no shortage of topics. Nice to see so many friends, so many new faces in the chat. Hope you guys are enjoying yourselves in there as well. Let's start with the latest twist and turn in L'Affaire Dubois. That coming late yesterday, sort of out of complete right field, where It's announced that Pierre-Luc Dubois has accepted his qualifying offer and has agreed to terms with the Winnipeg Jets on a one-year contract worth $6 million. It's a pay raise, of course, about a 20% pay raise from the $5 million that he was making last year as a member of the Winnipeg Jets. But, you know, this one, I mean, I didn't see this coming. But, you know, now that it happened, it sort of makes some sense, and we'll get into that. But I was sort of gearing up for a lengthier contract dispute, maybe spilling into a training camp, one of those things that doesn't get resolved until day two or day three of training camp. But lo and behold, Dubois accepts the qualifying offer, and he's under contract for at least this season at the $6 million mark, Dave.
Yeah, he had till 5 o'clock yesterday to accept that qualifying offer from the Jets. Otherwise, it would have expired. But you're right, Drew. I mean, I didn't know, you know, people were tweeting at us and messaging us on various social medias, you know, what's going to happen. I'm like, honestly, it really, like, there has been such a wide, I mean, I've used every Pierre-Luc Dubois picture in the Illegal Curve archives, thanks to Colby Spence and Alex James. We have lots of them. But, I mean, it's been nothing but Pierre-Luc Dubois all week. So, you know, there's been so much speculation, so much discussion, and whether it's in Winnipeg, here in Winnipeg, or in Toronto or in Montreal, like this situation, I jokingly said on Twitter, I'm going to have to pay the situation from Jersey Shore royalties for the amount of time I'm using the word the situation. But the situation with Pierre-Luc Dubois is drawing a lot of interest and a lot of conversation. And you know, like, it's interesting because guys from the Montreal Gazette had a show that they did, like a Pierre-Luc Dubois special, essentially. I've got it on illegalcurve.com if folks want to watch it. Obviously, after you're done watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. But the truth is that everybody is discussing what the price might be and whether this is going to happen. And you know, look, I mean, we saw with the Tkachuk deal, like teams, mm-hmm. I mean, that, again, you can say whatever you want. And obviously both the players, if you, I don't know if you want to go through the trade route, but like both the players that Calgary acquired are going to be UFA next year. But if they
happened, let's get into that and we'll sort of correlate it to Dubois, because there is some, I think there's some similarities in the situations there. Late last night, while the Bombers were putting away the Edmonton Elks.
What about the Jays, by the way? Can we talk about that Jays score?
Well, that's ridiculous.
That was insane. Yeah.
The Jays, in case you missed that one, the Jays defeated the Boston Red Sox 28-5 last night. Insane. Which is not, which if you were writing a movie script about a bad slow pitch softball team, even they wouldn't lose 28-5. But you know, congratulations to the
Boston. Including, by the way, I know this isn't an illegal pitch show, but including the fact that there was an inside the park grand slam. I mean,
that doesn't happen every day.
That doesn't happen every day. So, no. Anyways, let's get back to hockey.
A bad day in Boston for the Red Sox, but that's always a good thing for Jays fans. True. The trade last night was Matthew Tkachuk going to, and I'm just going to give you the high points of the trade, going to Florida after signing an 8-year contract extension with Calgary. Right. So it's basically a sign and trade. 8-year contract extension. He gets traded to Florida in exchange for the main pieces, Jonathan Huberdeau and Mackenzie Weegar. Both Huberdeau, and then there was a first-round pick as well, and a young prospect who was a third-round pick of the Panthers a couple of years ago. Yeah. Huberdeau and Weegar are both going to be UFAs at season's end.
Yeah,
and then, with Tkachuk, he had made it clear he wasn't going to sign a contract extension in Calgary, mm-hmm. which is where it sort of ties into the Pierre-Luc Dubois situation, because Tkachuk was going to be UFA at season's end. This coming at the end of the 22-23 season, he was going to be a UFA. Dubois, of course, has that extra year before he's going to hit UFA status. But you can definitely see the correlation between the two situations,
right?
And how Brad Treliving sort of, he decided not to play out the situation, not to kick down the can down the road, as we see so often happen here in Winnipeg when it comes to players who might not be here for the long term. Instead, he acted quickly, and at the very least, if he can't get Weegar and Huberdeau signed to contract extensions, you know both of those guys are going to fetch a huge return at the trade deadline if it comes to that from Calgary's perspective. But very interesting, the ties to the Pierre-Luc Dubois situation, who, of course, is going to be under contract for whatever team, Jets or a different team altogether, this year at $6 million, will then be RFA for another year and then get into UFA status.
And now, of course, everybody in Montreal thinks that they're going to get Huberdeau for a song and a dance. So, like Pierre-Luc Dubois, better watch out. He might not be prime target number one over in Montreal next year. But look, I think you're right, Drew. I think there are a lot of parallels. I think there's a lot that folks can look at in terms of what that sort of that return he was able to get. And you're right, and I'm seeing it in the chat. There is a lot, like Marco's saying, there's a lot of, you know. There's a downside, right? Because there's a risk. That's right. But it's a calculated risk. And again, as you just touched on, these guys will be able to fetch you a big price if you are, you know, not in it, or you realize you can't sign them. And now you have a luxury of time. You don't have that same sort of drama connected to it with, could you imagine? And again, it's something we're going to imagine here in Winnipeg, what it's going to be like. Pierre-Luc Dubois will be speaking on Monday. We will, of course, have that covered. I'll most likely be, I don't know if we're probably doing it by Zoom would be my guess.
I think it's a Zoom media appearance.
Okay, so I'll be on the Zoom. I won't be in the room, but I'll be on the Zoom. Well, so I'll technically be in our room. But exactly. So we'll have that on legalcurve.com and you can watch it there. But I mean, it's going to be an interesting one, right? Because I can only imagine. And look, for whatever you want to, like, people are upset and they're disappointed in his behavior or his agent's behavior, which obviously ultimately agent represents a player, doesn't go rogue. But I mean, he's a guy who stood up and he spoke a lot last year, and he wore his heart on his sleeve, if you want to use that expression. And I think that it'll be a very interesting media availability on Monday. So I'm definitely looking forward to that and hearing what Pierre-Luc Dubois has to say about this. A way this has kind of unfolded, because I think there's a lot for him to answer, because ultimately this became a huge distraction when it didn't really need to be.
Well,
right?
But you know what? I'm gonna look, Matthew Tkachuk. You can be in one of two situations. Mm-hmm. You know, and we're gonna use Calgary as the analogy here. I mean, sure. You can be in the Johnny Gaudreau situation where you know you think you have you elect to hold on to the player, which is what Calgary should have done, and then you think you make a very competitive offer and then you lose him for nothing. And that's the risk that you have to take. Or you could be in the Matthew Tkachuk situation in Calgary where the player was very forthcoming and said, I'm not interested in signing here. I'm giving you basically a year's notice that allows you to then go out and make a move. Pierre-Luc Dubois didn't say that he won't play for the Winnipeg Jets. He never said that he's going to sit out, you know, the season or anything ridiculous like that. He signed his qualifying offer yesterday. Mm-hmm. At the very least, he's going to, you know, if the Jets elect to keep him, he's going to be a member of the Jets for this coming season.
Mm-hmm.
If the Jets decide to facilitate a trade, you know, before the start of the season or during the season, so mm-hmm. be it. And that changes his status.
Sure.
All he said to the team is, look, I'm not interested in re-signing here 2 years from now. And that's the prerogative that he gets by virtue of his unrestricted free agent status. The team might not like it. The team might have hoped that they would be able to convince him to stay because his dad's an assistant coach with the Moose, that he's a Canadian player, that he spent time here during the, you know, the COVID shutdown, all X, Y, and Z. But mm-hmm. you know, Dubois under no obligation to live the rest of his life here in Winnipeg if he chooses not to. And the Jets might have to just take their medicine. I don't really sort of understand the perspective that he's done something wrong, that he's not, that he's performed an ill upon the Winnipeg Jets. I think he's just been honest. The Jets might not like the honesty. They might not like the medicine that they're receiving, but it's incumbent on Kevin Cheveldayoff to do one of two things. Or one of three things, hypothetically. Trade him.
Mm-hmm.
Lose him for nothing, if that's the route you want to take, which would be malpractice on Kevin Cheveldayoff's part. Or three, spend the next 2 years trying to convince him to change his mind. Pierre-Luc Dubois has put his cards on the table, and now it's up to the Jets to act to the cards that they see.
So, Drew, the qualm that most people, I think, would have with your argument isn't that he put his cards on the table with the Jets. Because when you're doing a negotiation, you're allowed to do whatever you want. You know, when two people are at a negotiating table or whatever that group looks like, you're negotiating in good faith between two parties. That's fine. Mm-hmm. The issue isn't that. The issue is that it leaked to the media the way it did, that he only wanted to go to Montreal, and the manner in which it was done. So I don't think anybody cares. Like, I agree with you. There's no obligation for him to be in Winnipeg long-term. He has no responsibility to the organization other than to fulfill the expectations of his contract, which for the record, again, and it's one thing we're not used to seeing in the NHL's guys kind of, I mean, you know, you saw the picture from the 2016 draft about the guys who have been traded in that group.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, the top 10, it was like trade. The only guy who hasn't been traded, it was Austin Matthews. Yeah. So, I mean, it's an unusual situation with RFAs because generally you still think of them as being under team control. And I mean, folks might not like it, but look at Patrick Laine, right? Signed with Columbus last night for 4 years, mm-hmm. 8.7, right? So I don't think anybody would ever have a problem with what Pierre-Luc Dubois wants, but you just have to keep that stuff within the negotiating room. And leaking it to the media, we don't know authoritatively, but the Jets would have no impetus to do it because why would, I mean, yeah. Unless it was just the ultimate, like, you know, we're going to get out ahead of this, but it just made no sense really. So, because all it does is it puts them into a corner. So I 100% agree. No player has an obligation. I don't care if they're from Winnipeg. They don't have to want to live in Winnipeg for the rest of their life. Like I choose to, you choose to, lots of people in the chat choose to. That's fine. That's our prerogative. That's our choice. And you know, you fulfill your contractual obligations. And then when they're done, you are a free agent and you can go wherever you want. I just think that the reality is the manner in which it was done, especially given the fact that the Jets had body blow after body blow, right? The Jets were staggering, you know, Shifley at the end of the season, then the Wheeler stuff, then the Trotz watch. Mm-hmm. And it's like, boom, boom, boom. And then all of a sudden, the final shot comes with this report from Friedman. And again, Friedman generally, I'm not saying he doesn't get anything from the Jets, but if it's Friedman, it's probably coming from the agent and not necessarily from the Jets. So there you go, right? That's kind of, to me, that's the final body blow from a Jets offseason that just had taken too many already. And I think that is the reason why I think people have a problem with it. And again, like I said, I'm not suggesting that it can't be something that can be got, you can get past. I just think that the path in which it was achieved was not ideal one and not one in which people would be happy. So again, we can listen to the chat. You're kind of orchestrating it right now. I'm just kind of spinning off my head and thinking, but I suspect that is probably where people have a problem, not with his ultimate decision of wanting to wear a Habs jersey, right? Nobody blamed Matthew Perreault when he had the option to be a UFA. He'd always dreamed of playing for the Habs. You know, I mean, the Jets probably would have signed him for more money than Montreal. I think when Montreal gave him like 900, I think, or maybe less, whatever. But the point is that nobody blamed Matthew Perreault after giving years and years to the organization of wanting to go back home, right? I mean, I think people wanted to keep him, but I think they understood. I don't think anybody's going to say the same thing. But again, ultimately, you traded away Patrick Laine, a guy who could score 40, 50, 60 goals, whatever. Yeah. And you have to be able to, like, and that's the other element of this that we have to factor in, Drew, right? Like, and again, you gave away Jack Roslovic.
Yeah.
For, you know, he had 22 goals. And again, with that group, I jokingly said it, he could be a 30-40 guy next year. Mm-hmm. So I just think like that's part of the, number one, I think the concern for Jets fans would be the manner in which this transpired. I don't think anybody likes that personally. And
talking about the kneecapping of a market for Dubois is basically what you're saying about the manner in which.
Well, to be honest with you, it's twofold. It's one, it's the kneecapping. Yes, for sure. Saying I'm tunnel vision. I'm only going to Montreal. It's also the manner in which it came out. Again, like I said, the timing stunk for the Jets because they were in the middle of the old Barry Trotz thing. Yeah, and then it comes out. Yeah. No, I'm just saying it was an unnecessary. Drew, nobody knew about it. I pay attention to the Jets. I write about the Jets every single day.
Yeah.
It was not on the radar. It wasn't even close to being on the radar. I'm sorry. Nobody was talking about Pierre-Luc Dubois.
But that's obviously what he and his agent, they did that, you know, deliberately. It was a strategy. I mean, now you might not like
that. Of
course. Yeah. You might not like the strategy, and I understand that, and you might think less of Pat Brisson, or you might think less of Pierre-Luc Dubois for authorizing it, but their goal is to get to Montreal and as a member of the Montreal Canadiens as fast as possible, not necessarily waiting the 2 years until UFA status. And so they're pouring fire on gasoline, or they're pouring gasoline on fire.
I wouldn't pour fire on gasoline.
That would be a bad idea. But they're pouring gasoline on fire, or there's a spark, they're pouring gasoline to make a fire. And that's certainly their prerogative, and that could certainly impact how the Jets want to do business with any future Pat Brisson clients. But that's the, you know, and so I understand from that perspective, you know,
But Drew, if I'm Montreal, I'd be pissed off too. Because the truth is, I mean, again, yeah, you could get him for maybe 50 cents on the dollar. But if I'm Montreal, like, one, why do you want to be good next year? Why do you want Pierre-Luc Dubois next year and pay, like, they're not going to pay Suzuki. No. So why do you want to,
Suzuki, you mean?
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. Why do you want to like give away assets for a guy who ultimately is going to come there anyways?
You probably wouldn't necessarily. I mean, I don't know that you need to fast forward the rebuild, because I agree with you. There, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois on the Montreal Canadiens this coming season does, you know, it improves the team, but it doesn't make them any sort of, you know, contender. It makes them maybe a fringe playoff team in the East, or a fringe playoff contender in the East. But, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff as well, even if Dubois 2 years from now is only going to go to Montreal and is only going to sign in Montreal, could get a pretty hefty return from a team in the NHL who wants Pierre-Luc Dubois under contract or as a member of their team for the next two seasons.
Absolutely. I said that last week. I 100% agree with what John Chan is saying. And that to me is, that's the whole idea of what I said. Like I said, if you're the Jets, you weather the storm. You say, you let Pierre-Luc Dubois, I mean, look, he made the bed. Now he's got a lie in it on a Monday. Lie could be an operative word, but he's going to have to come up and answer for, you know, to the media and speak, you know, and talk about this situation. And he could deny it. He could say he doesn't want to get into it. He wants to focus on being a member of the Winnipeg Jets. Again, all his prerogative. if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff right now, you're not accepting 50 cents on the dollar for this asset. What you're suggesting is, and again, I think it makes the most sense. You're going to play Pierre-Luc Dubois in your lineup. First of all, you're going to see what the room is like. And we don't know, you know, we were joking last week that it was the run it back show. We don't know what the Jets are going to do there. There's lots of speculation, but the reality is it's all dependent on how the Jets start and how things look. And look, winning will solve a lot of problems. You know, that room will become a quote fun place to be if the Jets somehow start to win. If they play a structure, Rick Bonus can get this team structured sufficiently. Maybe the Jets start winning games and turn things around and there's a lot of fun being had. But if it doesn't happen, if someone approaches you with an offer like Calgary got, hey, guess what? If you're Kevin Cheveldayoff at the trade deadline, you're saying, if I'm a contender and I'm saying I can get Pierre-Luc Dubois it won't even be 6 million, of course, but like if I can get Pierre-Luc Dubois at a very affordable cap hit for this year, knowing he's under team control for one more year, and I'm a contender who thinks I can go for it, why am I not acquiring that asset and being willing to pay for it?
But why aren't the Jets making that trade now? You saw Calgary didn't wait.
Drew, like that's like you saying, well, let's fight, but I've got one hand tied behind the back. I mean, who's going to win that fight? You're going to win that fight. Well, I probably still win. But the reality is that you're probably going to have a better chance of winning because you're not handcuffed. So, I mean, like the Jets are handcuffed. I mean, sure, let's make that trade to one team. I mean,
No. Why does it have to be one team? It can be any of the 32 teams.
Sure, of course. But I'm suggesting
to get two seasons out of, I mean, you see what rentals go for at the trade deadline. This isn't a rental. This isn't a guy. This isn't Claude Giroux going to Florida for 2 months and a playoffs and two playoff series. This is a guy who would be on your team potentially for 2 full years. Why not make that trade now when I believe his value or the value to an acquiring team would be at its highest? Because a $6 million cap hit is not, you know, is not oppressive to fit into your books, especially when you can go over the cap in the offseason. You know, and sure, maybe it gets a little bit easier as the season goes on, but I always find the argument that, oh, the salary, it makes it impossible to make a trade. I always find it to be a little bit of a specious argument. If they want to make the trade, they can figure out a way to get the cap hit and to work it into their books, whatever team's acquiring any player. If I'm Kevin Cheveldayoff, and I mean, I believe that this is the time to strike on a Pierre-Luc Dubois trade. You're going to have many suitors who'd be interested in acquiring him for 2 seasons, and kicking the can down the road to this trade deadline or next offseason, I think reduces what you're going to get from him. I mean, you'll get something that looks like the Trouba deal if you'd make this trade next offseason, where you get a first round pick and a young player in Neil Pionk-esque. So you're going to get a young forward and you're going to get a first round pick. If you make that trade now, I think you're getting more for him. I think you're probably getting a bit stronger return. And I get that, you know, the Jets are in the Wheeler window or whatever that means. But I mean, look, let's be honest. I mean, this team isn't, as currently constructed, with you look at their forward group and you look at all the questions, they're not among the upper echelon of the NHL. So you need to figure out what you are. What are you? Are you in the mushy middle where you're hoping that everything, you know, breaks perfectly and you might win a round or maybe 2 rounds? Or are you trying to figure out a way to get to that upper echelon of the NHL? Or are you looking to get an entire rebuild underway? And that's the problem, is, and it's been the problem for the entire offseason, is that there's no cogent philosophy or cogent plan, at least that I'm aware of, for how the Jets have approached this offseason.
Okay, so I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm not going to sit here and say that it shouldn't happen. And I agree, like there is a risk. There's inherent risk with, like, while I'm going to advocate that you could trade him at the trade deadline and receive quite a bit, you know, from a contender. I mean, the truth is there is an inherent risk. If he stinks, if he has a terrible season, if he doesn't look like he's invested, right? If his attitude isn't the right attitude. I mean, there is absolutely an inherent risk with, you know, allowing him to be in the room if he's causing an issue, right? If he's overtly not wanting to be in Winnipeg and in that room, I mean, there could be potential there. So, I mean, if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, you're not advertising this. I mean, the Jets don't like to make their business public at the best of times. So they're certainly not going to be out there like, oh yeah, sure, we're shopping Pierre-Luc Dubois. Anybody, I mean, again, you know, at the NHL, as I've long said, this is like high school. So gossip spreads like wildfire.
The worst high school.
Yeah. But anyways, the point is that I think you're constantly looking. I don't think you say, okay, well, we got Pierre-Luc Dubois signed to his deal. So you know what? Hey, we're good. We'll get our remaining. We're going to sign a couple more RFAs, you know, maybe get a couple of UFAs into the organization. And then I'm heading to the cabin for the rest of the summer. I think ultimately what you have to do is you have to keep trying to figure out how are you going to make your hockey club the best hockey club it can be. And does that include Pierre-Luc Dubois on that roster in a Jets jersey? So anyways, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens, Drew. And yeah, I think it's going to be a fascinating, fascinating summer. And, you know, look, I mean, the speculation, I wrote about it in the post on LegalCurve.com yesterday. I said that the speculation about a contract situation stretching into the summer, that's done. But now what does it become? It becomes potentially trade drama. So again, we'll see what happens with Pierre-Luc Dubois. I think it's going to be very, very interesting with all of them. Mark Scheifele, I mean, Mark Scheifele's become, nobody talks about Mark Scheifele anymore, and even Blake Wheeler, it sounds like that's kind of coming back down to earth a little bit. So I would be surprised to see him back in the Jets jersey for the season. Like I said, fascinating stuff, but let's look forward to the new bench bosses coming up. So you're probably going to want to hit a commercial break right about now, Drew.
You're absolutely right. Don't go anywhere. When we come back, new Winnipeg Jets assistant coach Marty Johnston joins us on the show. It's a Saturday morning. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk are with you. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Bottom of hour number one. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk with you on this Saturday morning, expecting to be joined by Marty Johnston, assistant coach, new assistant coach for the Winnipeg Jets momentarily. Hopefully we'll be able to bring Marty in. That's the plan at the very least. Dave, you're very familiar with Marty, of course, having covered him and his role as the assistant coach for the Manitoba Moose for the last number of years. So it's obviously 5 years spent behind the bench with the Moose. And he had a few games up with the Jets last year when Jamie Compan was away from the team. So Marty has a little bit of experience at the NHL level, a handful of games, but obviously more coming his way now that he's been named the assistant coach for the Winnipeg Jets alongside Brad Lauer under the tutelage, of course, of headman Rick Bowness. So it'll, you know, a change behind the Jets bench, of course, because we're so used to seeing some of the same characters that have been there for so many years. So it'll be interesting to get the perspective of Marty momentarily when he joins us, hopefully.
Well, and I think that's something that Jets fans have to be patient with, right? I mean, I think there is going to be a system in place with this Jets club that you may not be used to seeing. So I think it's a new regime, and I think there is an element of, I mean, Rick, there's Marty now. Marty's ready to join us, but look, I think it's, you know, like I said, I think it's going to be an exciting thing for Jets fans to see, and we'll talk to Marty about it right away.
Here we go. Marty Johnston, the new assistant coach for the Winnipeg Jets, joins us now on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Marty, first and foremost, welcome to the program, and congratulations on the announcement yesterday, or a couple days ago now, I guess. How take us through your emotions. Obviously, you knew it was coming. You had agreed to it. You know, but has it become more of a reality when you see the press release come out?
Yeah, I mean, I think for our family, when the press release came out, that was when we really got to enjoy the moment. Obviously, the four of us at home were super excited after I had gotten the call from Rick. But then to get the news and when it was released publicly, obviously, it was quite something to hear from former players and friends and family. And it was really nice for them to enjoy that moment, too. But yeah, didn't make it as a player, but certainly really excited that that I've done it as a coach, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Certainly. You know, you mentioned you got the call from Rick. So, you know, can you maybe sort of walk us through the process or what happened here? Did you have much familiarity with Rick Bowness prior to, you know, the last, you know, let's say 6 weeks, couple months when he's been, you know, the head man here in Winnipeg? And then how did your relationship with him evolve to the point of getting hired as the assistant coach?
Yeah, I had no prior relationship with Rick. Obviously, I had known him, and when you go to coaching clinics and stuff like that, you see those people and you say hello, but really didn't know him at all. Didn't know any of the staff, actually. I don't know Scott or Brad, But, you know, over the course of time, that's going to change. We're going to spend a lot of time together. And obviously, we're going to get to know each other really well. You end up having more meals with your coaching staff than you do with your family during the season. But how it all worked out was, I went through the interview process. I had two interviews with Rick, and it was really good. Obviously, he put me at ease the first time we met, and just wanted to kind of get to know who I was. And you know, it was a fairly thorough process, but one that I really enjoyed. And, you know, I left both times knowing that, geez, this is a special person. He made me feel good about myself. He's got a real positive energy to him. And I think that's really going to help us. You know, our leader has a smile on his face. He's excited about the opportunity, and I'm excited about helping out.
You know, Marty, you've spent five seasons with the Manitoba Moose. You've had two good leaders in Pascal Vincent and Mark Morrison. So what have those two men done for you and your coaching career?
Yeah, I mean, they've been both excellent. Obviously, Pascal 5 years ago took a chance on a guy coming from university hockey, and it was very similar to this scenario. I didn't know Pascal at all. And I didn't know Eric either. And you know, over the course of those 4 years, I got to learn from an excellent coach. And then last year with Mark coming in, I think it was really good for me to see a different vantage point, a different approach that a head coach takes. And I think, you know, both of them have prepared me to, you know, support Rick and give him what he needs. And everybody does things a little bit different. And you take pieces of each of them in terms of what you would do in your own approach. And I'm certainly very grateful. And I had really two good role models to work under in that 5 year period. And obviously staying within the organization and having existing relationships with the players, that's something that I feel is advantageous for me as well. It's not going to be a room full of new players. You know, a lot of them I have a relationship with, and some of them I just know from being through training camps for so many years.
You know, Marty, one of the things that Mark did that was different was that you spoke to us after the games, and you and Eric, and of course, and that's something that I'd never experienced in all the years of covering hockey. And what did that do for you? Because it seemed to me, like Mark said, this is the AHL. It's not just about developing players. It's about developing coaches. And some guys don't necessarily take that tack, but I thought it was a very interesting one. And again, it provided us, you know, speaking to you guys after the game, it was not formulaic. It wasn't the same conversation, especially in the AHL where it's back to back to back. But what did that do for you as a coach, allowing you to have that opportunity after games to speak?
Yeah, I think it added a layer of, you know, development in me as a coach. Obviously, when you deal with the media right after a game, it's great when you win. But when you lose, you have to manage your emotions. And you have to make sure that, you know, you're sending the message not only to the people that watch and support our team, but to the players in our room. And I'm grateful to have that opportunity to work with guys like you and learn on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, it was something that I enjoyed, and certainly part of what coaching is now in hockey and certainly in the NHL. So, it was a great experience. I'm certainly very grateful to Mark that he allowed me to do that. And I look forward to supporting the Moose and watching them win more games next year.
Well, I was just going to say quickly, Marty, that luckily for you, you guys won a lot of games last year. So you didn't really have to come out and speak about losses, especially here at home.
Yeah. No, it was a great season. And it was a season I really enjoyed. You know, we talked about it time and time again about how easy it was to coach that group. And we had a really talented group of players as well. I think sometimes that gets lost when we talked about our season. We had really talented players, and anytime you have talented players, it makes it easy for a coach to win a few more hockey games. So, it was a great season. Thoroughly enjoyed it and really cherished my time with the Moose.
Marty Johnston, Winnipeg Jets assistant coach, is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media platforms. Now, Marty, you're sort of coming in from an interesting perspective on the coaching staff in that you're the only one who was in town last year, albeit with the Manitoba Moose. But given the proximity of the Moose and the Jets and sharing the same building and sharing, I'm sure you crossed paths, you know, you probably have a little more sort of insight into some of the trials and tribulations that the Jets went through last year. How do you think that sort of knowledge is going to be put into play this year with your new role as a Jets assistant coach?
Yeah, I think the knowledge that I'm going to provide is probably more so the development and the younger players that, you know, played a handful of games with the Jets or spent a significant amount of time with the Moose in the past. I do have a relationship, but really I think what we're doing right now is getting to know each other. We're not really looking back, we're looking forward. And I think that the beauty of our staff is that there's four different perspectives coming from four different areas of the game. You know, obviously Brad has had a real successful season in Edmonton and having gone there with a junior club, and then Rick in Dallas, and then Scott obviously in Washington. So, you know, we're just kind of getting our feet wet, but we're not really talking about the past. We're really excited about what lies ahead, and there's lots of work ahead of us for that. So, so yeah, I mean, maybe I give some background on where they came from and how they learn. Everybody's a little bit different individually. So if I can help that, I will. But otherwise, yeah, we're looking forward and we're real excited.
You talk about the sort of the new roles and everything. Do you know what responsibilities you're going to have, you know, with the Winnipeg Jets as the assistant coach? I know, you know, some assistant coaches are responsible for the PK or the PP or the D or the forwards. Do you know where your area of focus is going to be for this coming season?
Things have happened so fast that I think that I'll let Rick discuss that, but you know, we're still in the process of actually meeting as a group. We've all talked individually, but we have to get together and really start talking. So I'll let Rick take the lead on that. But I will tell you, I'm really excited about my opportunity and role within the organization here.
You know, Marty, nobody likes going to a new school because you have to make a whole new set of friends. But but for you, again, you're staying within the organization. You're very familiar with everyone in the True North orbit, but you're also very familiar with a lot of these players. You've helped develop them and get them to this level. So from your perspective, with all of these guys, what does that do for you going into this organization, knowing that you've had a role in helping? Again, I know that these guys all work their asses off to get to this point, but you coaches always play a role. And what does it do for you from a conference perspective to come into that room and say, you've got a relationship with, you know, like I said, a lot of these guys who played in the AHL?
Yeah, no, it's, I don't know how much of a role I played. I mean, I know I certainly enjoyed watching them go from the American League to the NHL, you know, in my first few years. I think of Mason Appleton and the opportunity that I'm going to have to kind of reconnect with him. Mm-hmm. He was sort of one of the first ones that, you know, we spent a lot of time together, and he wasn't a high end prospect, or he wasn't a high draft pick, I should say.
Yeah.
But he certainly helped and earned himself to be a full-time NHLer. So that was a really great experience that I had. And then obviously in the last little while, I've spent a lot of time with Cole Perfetti, and that was really an enjoyable experience too. So, but yeah, no, I mean, these guys get to the NHL because they're deserving of it. They work hard, and our job as coaches is to support them and give them the tools that they need to tweak their game, but they're excellent players. So, I am looking forward to reconnecting with some of those guys. They've already reached out, and that's been quite nice as well. But yeah, no, I'm excited to work with all of them. You know, there's going to be some guys that I don't know, and I'm going to take on that challenge just the same as I would with someone that I've known for 5 or 6 years.
Marty Johnston is the Winnipeg Jets assistant coach, newly announced this past week. He joins us right now on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Now, Marty, you mentioned you got your coaching start, your main coaching bona fide, of course, with Carleton University in Ottawa, and then you went to the Moose as an assistant coach, now with the Jets as an assistant coach. How does your approach change depending on the role you're in? You know, how different was your approach, say, as a Moose assistant coach versus the Carleton University head coach? And then, you know, how do you think you need to tweak that again, if at all, as the Jets assistant coach versus the Moose assistant coach?
Yeah, I think the big transition was going from head coach to assistant coach. I'd been a head coach for 7 years, and at the university level, I was certainly sort of in charge of everything. And then you have to learn to adapt and make sure that you're supporting the head coach properly. And I thought Pascal was a really good role model for me in terms of that. He allowed me to be who I am, and I'm going to continue to be. Guys will know if you're not being real or being honest. So I have to be who I am, but I also have to fit within the role that I'm given on the coaching staff. And I think the 5 years in Manitoba have allowed me to do that. And I was really fortunate to have a change with Mark, so that, you know, I'm a little bit different than I was 2 years ago. But not a lot, but certainly 5 years ago when I came into the Moose, and having been a head coach for 7 years, I had to dial it back at times and figure out what it was that I needed to do. But, you know, I feel very confident with where I'm at as a coach. I can't wait to get started with these guys. And I know that my job is to sort of read off of Rick and the other coaches and make sure that I'm playing my role and doing my part and making sure that we move forward as a team.
No, Marty. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Drew.
No, go ahead, Dave. Sorry.
Okay, Marty. You know what? Like, we focus on the Jets here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, but we also focus on the Moose, and then we can't let the Moose get forgotten. So you spent 5 seasons in Manitoba with the Manitoba Moose. If you had to look back, and I mean, you've had a little bit of time. It hasn't been a lot of time, but if you've had a little bit of time now to reflect on the 5 seasons, what are one or two of your highlights of coaching the Manitoba Moose or assistant coaching with the Manitoba Moose?
I think when I look back, I believe it was our first year. My first year when we had a real strong first half. I believe we were in first place and we went on a long winning streak. That was really, really fun. And then obviously winning that playoff series against Grand Rapids and getting to experience a professional playoff round. Mm-hmm. That round was an absolute war. And I think it really taught me and a lot of the other young players what it takes to win, not only in the regular season, but in the playoffs. So that series against Grand Rapids was excellent. And then, you know, from there, I think there's so many neat moments with the Moose, like the New Year's Eve games, some of those moments where the crowds were so big and some of the wins that we had. But probably the Grand Rapids playoff win was number one.
Marty Johnston, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Marty, a new assistant coach for the Winnipeg Jets. Marty, what I was going to ask was that, you know, it wasn't that many weeks ago that the NHL draft happened. And whenever we were interviewing the new draft picks, we usually ask them, you know, who's a mentor? Who's somebody you look up to? Who's sort of approach do you try and model yourself after? Same question to you, you know, throughout your coaching career, is there somebody that you've sort of used as your guiding light or your North Star for how you want to approach the game and the job night in and night out?
I think, you know, like I was very fortunate that I had the opportunity to be coached by Claude Julien in junior. And when I was done playing my junior career, he kind of suggested that I should think about coaching instead of just a second here. I'm actually at a baseball tournament in Brandon with my son, so apologize for that.
No rest for the wicked. You know, that family still comes first, even when dad gets a new job, right?
Marty, tell him to watch the Jays game from last night to be inspired.
Yeah. Well, we try to score that many runs today. But yeah, so I had the opportunity to be coached by Claude Julien, and when my junior career finished, I was kind of hopeful that he's going to tell me I had a great NHL career ahead of me, but the exit meeting started with if you ever think about coaching, I think you'd be a good coach. So at a young age, like 21, I started to think about that, and I've used him as a bit of a sounding board over the course of time. I was also really fortunate when I took the job at Carleton. I wanted to surround myself with someone that had a lot of knowledge, and I hired Sean Van Allen, who played in the NHL for quite a long time, and he was about 10 years older than me. And he really helped me as a young coach sort of establish who I am and what we wanted to do. And he's a really good technical coach who has since taken over the Carleton program. So those two guys are probably two of the biggest influences that I've had outside of obviously Pascal and Mark. But from there, like I said, you have to be who you are. You have to be true to yourself. And I think I've done that throughout my coaching career.
You know, Marty, players get a hot lap when they make their NHL debut. Now, you already made your NHL debut last year, so it's not necessarily going to be new to you. But what's it going to mean to you to be on that bench? You've been on the bench in Manitoba for a number of home openers, but you know, for the Winnipeg Jets home opener, full building, what is that going to mean to you and to your family?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to mean everything. Like, you know, it's in this line of work, the people behind the scenes really have to support you. I'm very fortunate that my wife supports what I do. I've got two kids in the city. We know what it means to the city of Winnipeg to be involved with the Jets. So, you know, on that night, I really hope that my mom and dad and my brother and my kids get to enjoy it and get to feel like they're a big reason why this is even possible. And, you know, we all have backgrounds and things like that. But for me, I really hope that my family takes pride in the fact that as much as it's me getting this opportunity, it was them that supported me along the way and you know, helped me follow my dream.
Marty, well spoken, well said. Congratulations again. We'll let you get back to the baseball. Are you the baseball coach, or are you just the supportive parent eating peanuts?
Yeah, I'm the supportive parent. I'm just a dad here.
Well, in that case, we'll let you get back to the responsibility number one. Congratulations again on being named a new assistant coach of the Winnipeg Jets, and we'll be sure to see you at the rink in not that many weeks. It'll sneak up on us as we sort of wind down the last few days of summer here. Congratulations. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, thanks a lot, and thanks for the support that you've given the Moose throughout the years. It certainly means a lot.
We appreciate that. Thank you, Marty. Take care. There he goes, Marty Johnston, the newest assistant coach for the Winnipeg Jets, joining us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Really well-spoken guy, Dave. You obviously have a lot of experience in talking to Marty and discussing with him in your time covering the Moose, but it is, you know, you can see that sort of get translated throughout the conversation, how well-spoken and how sort of down-to-earth he is.
Yeah, and you can, you know, just talking to people, whether they're connected to the Moose organization, everybody is very excited for him to get this opportunity because, as Mark Morrison, the head coach of the Manitoba Moose, says, this isn't just a development league for players. And I give him a lot of credit. I really do. And I'm not trying to butter him up, but I mean, it's the truth, because a lot of guys don't like to lose their staff. A lot of guys don't like to promote. And he did something. I mean, hey, some pessimists might suggest that he just didn't want to talk to me every single night. So as a result, he just said, I'll throw Marty and Eric and they can go talk to the Manuk. Yeah. But I truly think he really wanted to help their development. I mean, he knew they were coming in for hard Manuk questions after a game. But like I said to Marty, they didn't have to be hard very much because they won most of the games, especially in Winnipeg. So he's right. That 17-18 team was incredible, especially in November. I think they lost like three games. Michael Hutchinson was phenomenal. Jack Roslovic was phenomenal. Mason Appleton was excellent. They had a very good team. So had they not had recalls to the Jets, they most likely would have been a Calder favorite, I would have suggested. But anyways, no, Marty's a great guy. Really nice. I like seeing him around the rink. And I like the opportunity. I like the fact that it's, you know, people, it's True North hire. Well, you know what? Here's a guy. He works his ass off. He really does. And that's what you hear about him. And I'm not just here to like blow smoke, and I'm not here to promote the guy. I mean, he's off our show anyways now, and most likely we won't have him on again because you don't generally talk to assistant coaches.
I don't think that they've watched. I don't think they're canceling the youth baseball tournament or whatever to watch your analysis of the interview. I got to be honest.
For sure. I agree. And so ultimately, but I'm just saying that one of the things that you hear about him is that he is an extraordinarily hard worker and he puts the time and the effort in. And that's what you want from someone who is, I mean, it's a non-traditional manner of becoming a coach, right? Like Marty played he played in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. He played in the ECHL the majority of his pro career. He played a few, you know, 17 games or something like that in the AHL. So the point is, he didn't have a traditional, like, you know, expansive NHL career, and then he went into coaching. He's a guy who works. And like I said, that's one of the calling cards that you hear about him, is that he is a hard worker and he'll put the time and the effort in to improve himself and ultimately improve the players. So, like I said, I think it's going to be, I think he's a good hire. And I think, you know, and again, the familiarity, I mean, he knows a lot of the guys in the organization.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, I like it for two reasons. One, I mean, it's a fresh perspective in that you have a younger guy. I mean, Marty is, I think, what did it say, 43 or something like that, if I'm not mistaken. So younger guy who's getting his first real substantive, you know, stint in the NHL, never mind that handful of games where he was filling in. And he is going, you know, you look at the forward group for the Winnipeg Jets, and after the top six, which is, you know, include Dubois in that, but, you know, after that top six, there are a lot of young forwards that are going to be fighting for jobs, and young forwards that Marty is going to be familiar with. David Gustafson. He mentioned Mason Appleton. I mean, the Jets signed Jeff Malott. I mean, these are guys, you know, Jansen Harkins, obviously, he got signed earlier in the week as well.
I guess seems like a lifetime ago, Drew.
It was last Saturday. I mean, it was a week ago, and it seems like it was like 8 months ago or something like that. These are all younger players who are expected to have a pretty significant role for the Winnipeg Jets this year, based on the way the Jets haven't signed anyone else up front that's really, you know, going to be you know, marked down in Sharpie as having a role in the forward group. So these are young players who are going to be relied upon to play a sizable role. And now I believe for them, it should be a little bit more comfortable, or they will have an additional comfort factor in having someone familiar with their games in Marty Johnston behind the bench, as opposed to a brand new coaching staff where nobody knows anyone from Adam.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless the coach's name was Adam, but no, ultimately.
Hey, you don't, my adages don't need any commentary upon them.
Fair enough. Fair enough. The fact is, you're right. There is a lot of familiarity, and he will, like I said, I jokingly said it's like high school and you have to come in and meet a whole new class, but he is a familiar face and he is someone. I mean, remember, the assistant coach is the guy players confide in. He's the guy that is he's generally the good cop, right? He's the guy who comes in after the fact and gets to play that nice guy role. So, I mean, I'm not suggesting, of course, he'll be able to do that with the Jets, but he probably did that for a lot of these guys on the Manitoba Moose. You know, if they needed to do, now Pascal Vincent, Mark Morrison, their doors are open. They're very good in terms of communication. So they don't really leave players in the dark in terms of where they're standing. But sometimes you can say something to, yeah, I mean, I'm with Tico Napoli, that we'll see if the Jets decide to go young. I don't know if they would. And, you know, I think I could see Barron on the third line with the Appleton and Lowry, but sure. You know, I mean, we'll see if the Jets haven't really used a lot of, like, you know, true centers and then made them true centers again in the NHL. David Gustafson is one player that they haven't deviated from that, in the sense that he was always the example I always use is Jack Roslick, right? Jack Roslick played NHL center, even though I know he played wing in college, but he played center. And then all of a sudden for like the last 10 games of the AHL season before he got recalled, suddenly went to the wing. I'm like, well, that's unusual. And then of course he was called up and he went up to the wing. So generally speaking, you know, these guys don't always do that. And we see with Cole Perfetti, right? Cole Perfetti's a center, but of course he's on the wing. Gustafson, I would expect.
Perfetti familiar with Mark Morrison.
Marty Johnston.
Sorry, not Mark Morrison.
He's familiar with Marty
Johnston. Marty Johnston. But spending that season that he spent with the Moose, you know, the COVID year or whatever it was. Again, these are, I mean, this promotion makes a lot of sense. It checks a lot of boxes in the logical move, where there's, you know, it will be a little bit of a security blanket and a little bit of something comfortable for some of these young guys, having somebody around that they're already a little bit familiar with. Now, it's not to say that they're going to get off scot-free and now they can all of a sudden, you know, not put in the work or any nonsense like that. I'm not saying that by a long shot, but it is just another a familiar face as they get started, really, and really get into the meat of their professional careers for some of them.
No, I mean, there's no doubt about it. And he knows it. He knows the tendencies. He knows the work ethic. He knows. I mean, these guys are all connected. And I always say it's like high school, and it is. And people don't realize that, because these guys, it's like, I mean, they call it a brotherhood, but the truth is they all spend time together. They all watch. The coaches sit in their room and they gab. The players sit in their room, they gap, but there's intermingling on the road. And they're always, I mean, if you think about it, what are they doing? You know, you're on the ice for an hour a day. You're in the room for an hour a day. Well, you've got a lot of time downtime.
You're chit-chatting for the rest of the day.
That's right. You know, you're on buses together. You're on planes together. You're learning a lot about these guys. So, I mean, yeah, there's no doubt about, you know, and that's why the AHL is such an important developmental league. And I'm not just trying to turn this into a Manuk Moves Minute. It's the truth. I mean, it is. It's not just for players. And I'm sure, you know, everything that Marty has learned over the last 5 years under both Pascal and Mark will now translate into, and again, with all of this meat of players that are going to be up there and, you know, having to work with them. And it you know, there's a respect factor, because they'll know how hard he works. And they, you know, look, as I've said, this Jets team can't afford, like, you can't look down your nose. If you're a guy who's been in the NHL for, let's say, 10 years, and you see Marty Johnston, you're like, oh, he's an AHL coach. What is he going to teach me? Well, first of all, he's going to probably be able to, again, it's about following a system. It's not about, like, you know, Pascal Vincent used to call it, hey, you can have all the talent in the world. You can't do secret plays that nobody else knows what you're doing.
It's not the Sandlot football game you play with your buddies where somebody just goes, just go long. No longer.
Yeah, yeah,
longer.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So I think that there is, you know, like I said, this Jets team doesn't have anybody on it that has three Stanley Cup rings and says, I don't need to learn. This whole team, as far as I can recall, needs to win their first Stanley Cup as a collective group. There aren't any Stanley Cup winners as far as I can remember. So ultimately, you have to be open to and receptive to learning and growing. If you're not, if you're stuck in the same mindset of, I can't learn something from this guy because we didn't play in the NHL, he only played in the AHL, or he was an AHL coach, well, you're limiting yourself and you're limiting your team and you're just being selfish. And like I said, I suspect, I'm not suggesting anybody's going to do that. I'm just saying that would be a very negative and a very poor way to get this thing started. So, and like I said, I would expect that folks are going to come in there, and Marty's not going to be the big dog on campus anyways. I mean, he said that's Rick Bowness's job to be the head coach. He'll just facilitate whatever is needed. And I like I said, he's a good facilitator. He's a good teacher. He'll be able to convey that to the Jets, whether they're guys like Blake Wheeler who've been in the NHL a long time, or whether they're guys like Morgan Barron who trying to make their, you know, get established, or David Gustafson. So I think he can go from the top to the bottom and speak to everyone in the middle as well.
You're well said there, Mr. Manouk. Marty Johnston's appearance here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Betway, one of the most trusted voices in sports betting, both in Canada and all around the world. Betway is the sports betting app that puts you, the customer, at the forefront with a large selection of betting options and sports, as well as strong promotions and fair odds. What are you waiting for? Head on over to Betway and bet your way. Must be 19 years or older to play. Please play responsibly. When we come back, we touch on some additional signings the Winnipeg Jets made this week, and we'll be joined in the bottom of the hour by Brad Lauer, the other new assistant coach for the Winnipeg Jets. Hour number two up next. Don't go anywhere. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest-running comedy club, bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends, or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hi, Ez. A strange question for you. Why are you lying on the ground being crushed by a piano?
Well, Drew, I definitely tried to carry this baby grand piano down the stairs by myself, and somehow I failed miserably.
Right. Yeah. Sorry, that was a silly question on my part. My apologies. Would you like me to call Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage to help you move the piano? They are the most experienced piano moving company in Winnipeg, after all.
Yes, please call Rolly's and hurry. This piano is very, very heavy.
Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage offers stress-free residential moving services while taking great care of your personal belongings, including your piano. At Rolly's, no job is too big or too small. For more information, visit Rolly's.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
Hey, it's Aaron from Bernstein's Deli.
That's right, Ezzy. I'm the guy who makes all your sandwich dreams come true.
So when you think Illegal Curve, what comes to you?
How about juicy chicken schnitzel, grilled salami, fried onions, melted cheddar cheese, and honey mustard on toasted thick-cut city rye bread?
Man, that's like the holy grail of sandwiches.
And so it shall be known as the Illegal Curve Sandwich.
The Illegal Curve Sandwich. Try it today at Bernstein's Deli. Find us at Corridon and Lanark or online at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile.
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whiten my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go...
We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard.
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see lindenmarketdental.com.
So you're a pizza person, You married a wing person, but somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal. Starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
Our number two Legal Curve Hockey Show starts now. We're live on YouTube. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk with you on this Saturday morning, the penultimate edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show before we head off for our summer hiatus. But join us next Saturday. We'll still be here, Dave and I, bringing you all the latest Winnipeg Jets news, discussion, analysis, interviews, everything under the sun. And then, as of course, as we do in August, we will pop up when necessary to bring you the latest of our undoubtedly dynamic opinions. What do you have planned for August, Dave? Are you just going to explore Manitoba? Gas prices are dropping a little bit. Maybe you can drive out a little bit further, use the car. You don't necessarily have to use the moped anymore to get out and enjoy some of your touristy haunts.
I will be exploring MB as per usual. Riding mountains, Spruce yes. Woods,
yes.
Interlake, the White Shell, wonderful. You name it, I will be there. I'm going to try and get up to Peace Falls. Maybe Little Limestone Lake this year. I've always wanted to hit that spot. It's actually getting the Marl Lake. For all those who don't know, it turns like awkward. It almost looks like it's like you're in a tropical paradise somewhere in Manitoba. It's about 5 hours north of us here in Winnipeg. So there are some good spots in Manitoba. Steep Rock, Duck Mountains, Turtle Mountains, lots of good places in Manitoba, lots of places to explore. I'll try and hit as many as I can.
And if anybody has a helicopter they're willing to loan to Dave Manuk for a good price, it would make his exploring of MB a lot easier and more convenient. So please contact Dave accordingly with any of your best helicopter-related offers.
Although, just quickly, we will still have some content. We still have some, there's some moose stuff that we'll probably be doing, or I will be doing. Yeah. And actually some ice peak.
You're actually going to be interviewing a moose while you're exploring Manitoba. Yes, that's how it's going to be.
That's what I was trying to. Well, and then while riding, actually, it was going to be riding on the back of a moose and on the antlers. I was going to put my laptop and then I was going to interview players while riding the moose just to be really authentic. So we'll see if we can do some moose interviews as well as some ice interviews potentially coming up in August. So there will still be plenty of content, I hope, on AlleleCurve.com and here on this channel. So as Drew likes to say, smash that subscribe button and make sure you're following along so you can be updated when we have new content.
There you go. Exactly right. Do as Dave says, otherwise he gets mad and you don't want to see an angry Dave M. Let's talk about some of the signings because we mentioned it off the top of the show. We talked about the Dubois signing, that one, him accepting his qualifying offer. He will play under a one-year, $6 million contract, whether that'll be in Winnipeg or somewhere else. Well, time will tell on that front over the coming weeks and months or so, but he will be under contract, which certainly adds a little bit of certainty and cost certainty to the equation as it relates to L'Affaire Dubois. But in addition to him, the Jets went out and signed Jonathan Kovacevic to a three-year contract. We know him as a young up-and-coming defenseman who is, of course, no longer waiver exempt. So it is important to get him under contract, and his future with the Jets or the Moose is very much a question to be determined. It's a two-way deal for the first 2 years of the deal, and then it becomes a one-way deal in year three. Jeff Malott signs to a two-year contract as well. Jansen Harkins signs a two-year deal. That happened last Saturday after we got off the air. And, of course, the unrestricted free agent, the Jets haven't dipped very much into this, but they go over to Finland and sign a depth forward in Saku Mainalainen, and I'm sure that I'm destroying his name, but I thought that was a pretty good effort at it, at the very least there, Dave.
No question about it, Drew, and you're right. And, it's funny how mad people get. Mad online. Folks are mad because they're like, oh, the Jets are going to win the cup when they read this. But, ultimately, you need to have depth in your organization. So, you know, these types of signings, if they don't happen, you develop these players and you're just supposed to let them disappear. Folks don't know, and I don't blame them because not everybody pays attention to what these guys are doing. But Johnny Kovacevic is a 6'5", mobile, extraordinarily bright. I mean, he's an engineer, went to school for engineering. So he's a bright guy off the ice, and which comes across when you're chatting with him. But I mean, he's a big boy who can skate, who can think the game, and he's on the right side. Well, Jets don't have a lot of that. And so, he
played tremendously well.
Well, yeah, for sure. No, no. I mean, he's been voted.
He's not like he's a slug or anything. He's a quality player.
Right. He's a 2017 third rounder. He was voted the Moose best defenseman in the last two seasons. And yeah. So, look, I mean, yeah, he's not a slug. And I've said this.
Played four games for the Jets. Sorry, interrupting. Played four games for the Jets last year when they were going through their injury troubles on the back end, and certainly adjudicated himself very well. He didn't look out of place. He didn't look like he was, trying to gasp for air. He looked comfortable and confident back there. Why wouldn't you sign him to a 3-year deal?
Absolutely. I mean, it's absolutely the case. And so, like I said, it's just funny though, because people don't know him. So people don't know who he is and what he can do. And that's fine. Right. I get it, because you don't pay attention. So you hear this and you're like, oh, well, whatever. But it's not like, I mean, the funny part is, it's not like the Jets went out and assigned Jordy Ben again. They actually signed a guy who, as you said, I mean, there's no way he clears waivers. I mean, I've been wrong with that before, where I think guys won't clear waivers.
I wonder if the fact that he's under a 3-year contract makes him less likely to clear waivers. That maybe a team doesn't want to necessarily take on. No, no.
Maybe more likely.
Sorry, more likely to clear waivers. Yeah. Yes, more likely to clear waivers, because maybe a team doesn't necessarily want to take a 3-year long risk on claiming a guy, off waivers. Now, that said, of course, if they take that risk and they don't like it, they could always put him back on waivers. But mm-hmm. I think that there's a strategy to the fact that it's a 3-year long deal, because he wouldn't typically be the kind of candidate to get that long-term contract, a relatively long-term contract.
I mean, I guess you could call it like almost like a bit of a poison pill, right? And the one way, two way. Yeah. I mean, nobody really cares about that. I mean, it's just how much your organization has to pay the guy when he's in the AHL. If it doesn't have an impact on his ability to go up and down.
No,
maybe. I mean, maybe it is. I mean, I again, like I said, I could be wrong, but I don't know many organizations that aren't going to take a risk on a guy who can skate, who's big. He's not. I mean, he's not a Brendan Dillon type in the sense that he's super physical. He's not super aggressive, but. I mean, him and Dylan Sandberg have formed a pretty good tandem for a number of seasons now. And hey, you could have that up. Generally, you don't see young defensemen paired together. So not necessarily the case. But like I said, I think he's another good addition to the organization. And maybe it is, Drew. Maybe it's he's 25 years old, right? I mean, he's kind of he's developed. He had the college route. He's had this time in the American Hockey League. I mean, I just see him as the Jets are going to have to decide how many defensemen they're going to want to carry, because ultimately, we've talked about it, if we're going to stick with Johnny Kovacevic, forget about the left side, because the left side is a mess. But on the right side, right, what do you have? You've got Pionk, DeMello, who am I forgetting?
Schmidt.
Oh, Schmidt. And now Kovacevic. And now Golanke, who's a 2017 fifth rounder, he had a great bounce back season. He's an RFA still. He needs a new contract. From the Jets, he'll most likely, I would think, clear waivers. I mean, he did pretty well, and he looked good in the playoffs. Not as good as Declan Chisholm, but Declan Chisholm, of course, is still waiver exempt, so you don't have to worry about him so much. You can bury him in the Moose and or allow him to continue to develop, I should say, as the top guy in the Moose. But again, like I said, there's a lot of familiarity with Sandberg and Kovacevic. So I mean, maybe the Jets take a risk and have that be their third pairing and mm-hmm. make a move. And here's a crazy notion: clear some salary cap. Allow your forward depth. Now, you don't want to make too many moves, because you don't, we talk about it. You need to be able to run through defense, and you're going to generally do it. And last year was an anomaly in the sense that the Jets, it was weird, because if you remember, for the first 20 games, Jets didn't have any injuries on the back end. None of their defensemen were getting injured, but then COVID, of course, struck, and then they started losing guys in that regard. Now, of course, who knows what's going to happen next year and whether that'll still be a factor. Maybe it is, and if it is, then young guys like whomever are going to get more opportunity. But like I said, I think Kovacevic is a very good addition. I think he's a type of player that the organization needs. Like I said, he's big. He can skate. He can move the puck. Got a decent shot. I just think he's a good, whether he's your seventh defenseman or on your third pairing and potentially moving up. I hate to ceiling guys and say, well, he can only be a third pairing guy. I'm not suggesting that, because he's developed every year he's been on the Manitoba Moose.
Yeah, look, I don't think there's any downside to it. I mean, the worst case scenario is you have a guy who's going to be a solid Manitoba Moose player for the next couple of seasons, and you've developed him and you keep him on your roster. And I don't think, again, there's things to get upset about when it comes to being a hockey fan. The two things that you shouldn't really get upset about are contracts that are worth less than $1 million on an AAV and 1 year contracts. Cause it was an old friend of ours, somebody who used to be associated with the show before he went on to bigger, brighter, better things, who always said there was no such thing as a bad 1 year contract because it's never going to hamstrung you, you know, too terribly where you're not going to be able to, you know, figure out a way to deal with it. So, you know, again, nothing to be upset about here. Jansen Harkins gets a 2 year deal. He was an RFA. It's $850,000 a year, you know, in terms of his salary cap hit. I think the Jets are expecting a lot from Jansen Harkins this year. He's no longer sort of that young guy who's just happy to be there. I would expect that they're going to look for him to play a more established role. It's not going to be in the top six of the Jets. I mean, it shouldn't be. I mean, I don't know why it would be in the top six, but you know, they do have holes that need to be filled out on that third and fourth line. And with a new head coach, you know, I think people are hoping to see those lines get more, especially the fourth line, more regular ice time, because we know that that was a hangup of Paul Maurice, is that the fourth line, you know, unless the team was up by four goals or trailing by four goals, the fourth line never seemed to get more than 5 or 6 minutes. You know, Jansen Harkins has established himself at this point as an NHLer, and he's going to play a role on either that, you know, on either the third or the fourth line moving forward this for the next couple seasons.
Yeah. And look, it comes back to the word opportunity, right? And I used it with Eric Comrie last summer when everyone was losing their mind because Eric Comrie wasn't an NHL backup. And I said, I think he's capable, and I'm not going to put a Ginsburg guarantee on it, but I said, I have faith that he can. I said that I think he can do it. I don't think there's any issues with Eric Comrie. I think he's more than capable. I watched this kid develop as an AHL goaltender and become one of the best AHL goaltenders. I think he's capable of being an NHL goaltender. He needs opportunity. Jansen Harkins is another guy. He is the hardest. I wrote an article about him. I linked it in the Jansen when Jansen Harkins signed last week. I linked to it about how the path to the NHL is anything but linear for some players and how his work ethic allowed him to get to where he is. And look, he's a 2015 second round pick. He wasn't like a seventh rounder. And again, once you're drafted and once you're in the system, it really shouldn't matter where you're drafted. We still reference it, of course, but he wasn't a low pick and there were a lot of expectations on him. Went down to the ECHL, worked his butt off. And like I said, you know, when we, especially now we're back, you know, in the room with talking to guys, but before, you know, when we would be in the hall doing media, he'd be like stretching and everybody else would be long gone. He'd be sitting there like stretching and doing all of this stuff. And like, he is a hardworking, determined kid. And just to give these guys 4 minutes, I think is just ridiculous. I think it's just, I think it's malpractice because I think it runs your big dogs way too much. And you get these guys into 25 minute range and it's just stupid because it's a long season. This is a marathon. It's not a sprint. And you have to have confidence. You have to be able to let these guys, and if you want to intersperse them, and if you don't want to run a young line or if you don't want to run a young D pairing, fine, I get it. But you have to be able to mix and match them. And again, like I said, that to me, my biggest complaint with the Jets last year was you had Scheifele, Dubois, Stastny, and Lowry. You could have run four centers deep. You could have mixed and matched and had a really nice balanced lineup. And instead you didn't. You chose not to do that. Now, sometimes you didn't have that option. Obviously, when guys got injured, you know, you'd move a Stastny up, whatever. But I'm just saying when you had that opportunity, you didn't. And as a result, that fourth line was like a non-existent fourth line. They didn't do anything. So, oh, wow, he didn't do anything in 4 minutes of ice time. Now, look, it's kind of like Evgeny Svechnikov, right? Evgeny Svechnikov played with Pierre-Luc Dubois and Kyle Connor. He got big minutes. Well, when you get big minutes, you have to be able to do something with them. And so if you're going to – it's kind of like that opportunity, though, right? Like, so you get that opportunity. The problem is sometimes guys – okay, it's a game, right? Like the guy's out for – he's got an injury. I know it's only going to cost him a couple of games. You're trying not to make mistakes. Right. So it becomes that opportunity argument again with like Eric Comrie. Eric Comrie would go up. He knows that, you know, insert goalie Laurent Brossoit is only injured for, you know, 2 weeks. So he knows he's going back down to the Manitoba Moose. So now he's not playing with like the confidence that he knows he's there. He's playing with the fear of not making a mistake and not losing that and not looking bad. And again, you're not necessarily playing the right way. And what did we talk to Eric about last summer was changing that mentality. And look what happened. Right. So, and we'll see what happens with him in Buffalo. But I'm just saying that you guys have to be able to seize your opportunity, but you want it to be able to be real. You want it to be like, hey, Jansen Harkins played 10 minutes last night. Did he do something with those 10 minutes? Fine. Maybe not. Play 10 minutes the next night. If you have a resume and he doesn't do anything with it, well, then fine. Then you jettison him to the press box. But I'm saying that you can't lament these guys playing 4 minutes and saying, well, he didn't really do anything with 4 minutes. What did he do with 4 minutes? Give the guy opportunity. Maybe he scores goals like he did in the bubble against Calgary. Or maybe he scores some other things. Like, you know, like I think Jansen Harkins is can be a little bit more effective. I mean, you could put him on that third line with Adam Lowry and Mason Appleton. I think, to be honest with you, he's a cerebral player. He's a responsible player. I don't dislike that line. I think that line could actually contribute offensively and be responsible defensively. So I think the guy can produce. I think he can be an impactful player. Do I think he's going to lead the NHL in scoring? No, I don't. But I think he is someone that can have an impact if given that opportunity.
2-year contract for Jansen Harkins, so he'll be around these parts for a little while longer at the very least. Same 2-year contract for Jeff Mellott, a guy who, of course, sort of was a goal scorer, leading goal scorer for the Manitoba Moose, a guy, again, sort of a hardworking guy. You know, is he going to crack the NHL level? Well, I mean, I think that would be sort of hard-pressed to do that, but he got into that one game for the Jets last year. But this is another guy who's just adding depth to the forward group, both at the primarily, I'd say, at the AHL level, but you never know when the NHL opportunity is going to come about. But he can score, certainly, at the AHL level, Dave M.
Well, it's funny because, again, he's another guy who, like, oh, great, he signed. You know, the organization saved. I'm like, hey, he scores from the inner slot. And where do the Jets not get a lot of goals? You know, getting guys into that inner slot. And so that's one thing Jeff does. And, you know, look, very hard worker. He is undrafted. Undrafted players tend to play with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. We haven't talked about Christian Reichel, of course, because, of course, he was injured. But, you know, maybe the Jets see him as a player who is going to be on that third line with Mason Appleton and Adam Lowry. You know, we're not the coaches. We don't make the decisions as to the lineup. But I'm just saying sometimes we tend to forget about Christian Reichel simply because he was injured. But, of course, he has that contract with the Jets. So there is that likelihood that they have a vision for him within that framework, within that structure. But ultimately, like I said, I mean, I like Jeff Mellott. I think Jeff, big boy, can score certainly at the AHL level. And
37 goals in the last 2 years at the AHL level. Nothing to sneeze at.
No, of course not. And works hard, you know, extraordinarily close with Morgan Barron, of course, because those guys were teammates in college. So there's some connectivity there. But I mean, I think it's a reward for a guy who just keeps working and just keeps getting incrementally better. And look, I mean, he's not young by any stretch of the imagination, right? So you've got a guy who you're not expecting, you kind of know what Jeff is at 25. But at the same time, I'm going to keep using this word, and I'm going to use it all summer, even though we've only got one more show, but on the site and whenever we do these little pop-ups, because I suspect I'm going to try and speak to Jeff and have a chat with him. So stay tuned for that. But it's all about opportunity, Drew. And so, I mean, Mason Appleton, guys, like, let's talk about Mason Appleton. Mason Appleton came out of, you know, the University of Michigan State University. Mm-hmm. He started on the fourth line with the Manitoba Moose. He worked his way up to being remember, he's a 6th-round pick in 2015. Worked his way up to being a first-line player, right? Him and Sammy Niku, dynamic on that team. Gets up to the Jets. I'm just saying that guys can come out of nowhere and surprise you that aren't necessarily you're expecting because they're not a household name. Oh, Ville Heinola. Oh, Morgan Barron. You know Morgan Barron because he traded Andrew Kopp for him. And don't get me wrong, Morgan Barron had a phenomenal playoffs. He was probably the most impactful Manitoba Moose player in that first round series against Milwaukee, scoring 4 goals in 4 straight games. So, I mean, Morgan Barron was excellent for the Manitoba Moose. And you hope if you're a Jets fan, that translates to next year with the Jets. But I'm just saying that guys like Jeff Mellott, you don't know. So, I mean, while folks will say, we'll look at their pedigree and say, ah, well, whatever, we don't know what we've got. There's a lot of guys who, again, like I said, I'm not expecting him to be a 30-30 guy at the NHL level. But I'm just saying, like, if you need him and he can provide, maybe that's something Jeff does. And if not, hey, you know what? He's going to be a top scorer for the Manitoba Moose, and that's not a bad thing either.
You mentioned Mason Appleton. He's got his arbitration hearing scheduled for August 11th, which is the last possible date for the arbitration hearings. I'd be surprised if it actually went came to fruition and they went to arbitration. The Jets have. Yeah, it doesn't seem like it should be contentious. It seems like there should be a pretty easy middle ground to find between the Jets and Mason Appleton. The Jets really have two RFAs left. It's Mason Appleton and it's David Gustafson. Gustafson, who is, of course, does not have arbitration eligibility. Leon Gavanke as well.
I'm like, don't worry about Leon there, Drew.
Sorry, Leon.
He'll come all the way from the Deutschland to beat you up.
All of our friends in Germany who are tuning in, my apologies. But so you're down to really three RFAs left. Appleton, the only one that's arbitration eligible. I wouldn't expect either of the three to be contentious, but then that leaves, it doesn't seem like the Jets are going to be dipping into the free agency pool to round out that forward group. Saku Maalainen or Maalainen, notwithstanding him getting signed to that two-way deal after he played in Finland for the last number of years. But you see a guy like Nito Niederreiter sign in Nashville for that 2 years, and
he would have looked good with the Jets.
He would look great with the Jets. It just doesn't seem as though the Jets are going to go that way. So any additional changes that are going to be happening to this roster. Mm-hmm. By my estimation, seem like it's going to be via trade, or this is basically the roster they're going to go into training camp with at this point in time. And they are, with the exception of, some guys who've left, like a Paul Stastny, they are more or less look like they're going to be running it back, because, a trade of Blake Wheeler at this point in time would be, I would qualify it as a surprise. There was a lot of smoke, but the fire never came to fully started burning. Even though it seemed like it was going to maybe at the draft, but long story short, here we are sitting on the 23rd of July, and this Jets roster looks like it might be fairly established for training camp.
Well, here's a crazy notion, Drew.
Yeah,
the Jets are called a draft and develop team, right? Maybe the saying should be draft, develop, and play. Because
it's the and play part that's always been the issue.
The and play, traditionally we've always said, oh, the drafts are draft and develop. Yeah. But then once they're done developing them, what are you doing with them? Are you developing them for other teams, or are you developing them for yourself? So, like I said, the Moose weren't exactly a bad team in the AHL last year. And had they got better goaltending, would have been a contender to challenge. I mean, they would have been a hell of a series against Chicago. They should have beaten Milwaukee, but it would have been a hell of a good series against Chicago. I'm not suggesting they would have beat them, but the fact is these kids are hungry, and you want them to, again, I'm going to use my new buzzword. It's more fun than running it back. Well, maybe not as fun. Opportunity. Give these kids opportunity. Like everybody already says, you know what they are. Rob's comment, which I highlighted, I think is a true one. Have a true forward line team. Really actually use all of your depth. I mean, look, I know Rick Bonus has traditionally changed the way he runs his team. And, if he's chasing lead or if he's protecting lead, it's interesting the way he adjusts systems and his play. Yep. But
by the way, I like that. A coach should adapt.
Yes.
What they're trying to do depending on the game situations.
Yeah. I'm 100% agreement. I'm just saying, you're not running it back with the identical roster. You are going to have guys who are going to necessarily be, I understand you're running it back with majority of the same potentially. And that'll be an interesting one. But again, I think you made the point. I think we're going to highlight it. Then we'll go to break and bring in Brad. But I think ultimately you have a whole new coaching system. These guys all have a clean slate. It's not like these guys come in with preconceived notions. I mean, I know obviously Rick Bonus has been in the Central Division, so he knows what he thinks of the Jets when he faced them last four times. But the fact is it's a clean slate. He doesn't have that sort of bias against player X or player Y or player Z. It's all brand new. So training camp is going to be an opportunity for players to really establish themselves and say, hey, you know what? I didn't get a lot of playing time last year. I'm going to knock the crap out of training camp, and I'm going to force them to not be able to send me down. And if you do that, hey, great. You've earned your spot. And I think that is all folks want to see. Draft, develop, and play.
When we come back, new Winnipeg Jets assistant coach Brad Lauer joins us for a conversation. Don't go anywhere. Tell your friends, tell your family. Brad Lauer coming up next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Bottom of hour number two. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Alongside Dave Minuk, I'm your host, Drew Mindell, and we're pleased to welcome to the program the new assistant coach of the Winnipeg Jets, or I suppose a new assistant coach of the Winnipeg Jets, after we spoke with Marty Johnston earlier on the program, Brad Lauer joins us on the show. Brad, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us, and congratulations on your appointment here in Winnipeg.
Thanks, guys. Am I muted? Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, we can hear you. You're all good. Okay. I appreciate
good,
that.
Good. Yeah.
You know, obviously, Brad, you had tremendous success last year with the Edmonton Oil Kings, getting all the way to the Memorial Cup, winning the Western Hockey League. Why was this now the time to go back to the NHL ranks and take this opportunity here in Winnipeg?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, every coach evaluates after every year. You know, I spent just over 9 years as an assistant coach prior to coming here to Edmonton, and you know, I've never had head coach experience prior to coming back to Edmonton in the juniors. And I think, you know, as a coach, you know, I always evaluate myself every season if I'm doing the right thing, or if, you know, if it's getting stale for me. And, you know, I just thought, you know, after those 9 years, I just needed something a little bit different for my game. I think I just needed something a little bit more challenging and to grow my game as a coach. I wanted to be a head coach. So I did that here for 4 years here in Edmonton. You know, took a team that was in, you know, we took a team from last place to first place the first year, and been very fortunate to have a lot of good players here the last 4 years. And, you know, the season was obviously the icing on the cake when you have an opportunity, when you have a chance and you win a championship in the WHL and then go to the Memorial Cup. You know, I just thought it was the right time now to check opportunities, see what was out there and take that step and get back to the National Hockey League. Because again, I truly believe it's the best league in the world, and you know, the best players are there. And I believe I'm a better coach today than I was 4 years ago.
I think, Brad, most people in Winnipeg will have forgiven you after your Edmonton teams destroyed Winnipeg in the WHL playoffs, but I think everyone's looking past that. I mean, that was a very anticipated series. How much fun? Yeah. I'll talk about the Jets' opportunity here, but just sticking with the Oil Kings, how much fun was that series? Because I know everybody in Winnipeg was looking forward to that battle between Edmonton and Winnipeg. And, you know, even those of us old enough to remember the Smythe division never really liked those battles. But from your perspective, how much fun was coaching in that series against Winnipeg?
Oh, it was great. I mean, all year long, we were 1-2, 1-2 all the way through the whole season, top of the CHL through the whole season. You know, Jeep's done a great job there in Winnipeg with the kids there, working with them and growing his team from last place to where they are now. They're going to be a heck of a team this season coming up. You know, it's a lot of fun when you can play. You get 1-2 going. I know the first game we had here was back in November, and you know, it was a big hype. It was a big buildup for our season, and you know, it was just all year. Each team is probably watching each other, and obviously, it's the two best teams in our league. You know, they meet up in the semifinals, and you know, I like the experience that my team had. Obviously, they're quite a bit younger than we were. You know, I think that gave us the edge. We were a little bit heavier, a little bit more physical. They have a little bit more skill, a little bit deeper skill. But, you know, I think they learned an awful lot this year than Winnipeg Ice did. And I think, you know, it was a lot of fun. It was a great series to go into. And obviously, you know, when you win that series, you go to the championship round. And, you know, it's just to see the kids go through it, it's just tremendous.
Brad Lauer, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Brad named earlier this week as a Winnipeg Jets assistant coach. Now, Brad, obviously you have familiarity with Rick Bowness. You both were assistant coaches together under John Cooper in Tampa Bay. How much did that factor into your decision? You know, the presence of Rick as the head coach and the ability to work with him again.
Yeah, I mean, that's huge. That was the biggest part of it, I think. You know, one was family for sure. You know, it just fits our lifestyle, fits our family right now where we are in our house. You know, obviously Bones is a huge part of it. I had Bones coach me when I was with Ottawa way back then for 30 games. I had a cup of coffee there, and, you know, it was fun. It was enjoyable. You know, we made, even though we were losing in Ottawa, it wasn't very good those days. You know, he still tried to make it enjoyable coming to the rink and really try to motivate, you know. And then I met him. We hooked up again here in Tampa a few years ago. And, you know, just the excitement he brings to the game when he walks through those doors is it's incredible. The passion he has for his players, the competitive drive he has. I was just so impressed. And, you know, I got to watch, you know, he ran the defense in Tampa, and, you know, I got to watch him every day work with those guys, and you know, I just seen the respect that Victor Hedman, all those guys, how they just looked up to him, and the value that he gave them. And, you know, if you ask those guys in Tampa, of, you know, prior to the Cup years, who they're best coaches, I bet you they're going to say it was Bowens, because it was just something to see. And I really respected that. And I got a lot of respect for Rick. I think he's going to do a tremendous job here for us. And, you know, that was a big part of it.
You know, Brad, you talk about sort of the ease he puts people at when they come into the rink. How important is that? You know, from the outsider's perspective, does the general public, the media, do we really appreciate just how grinding the season can be, and how important that individual who can sort of make it fun to come to the rink night in, night out can add to a team's dynamic?
Yeah, I think it's tough for the average person to understand what the NHL player goes through on a day-to-day basis with game-wise, practices, travel. You know, they're playing no minimum of 12 games a month up to 16 games a month. So you're playing every other day, traveling throughout. And there's a lot of pressure on players to perform. They all want to do their best. And I think Bones, I don't think you need a coach jamming more pressure and making them squeeze their sticks more than they already have the pressure on. So I think one thing Bones brings is just that relaxed, competitive nature to the team where, you know, they want to play for you. And I think that's tremendous. I think that's a big part of coaching nowadays is players being able to, one, respect what you have as a, what you want to do. But also give the players that comfortability coming to the rink and not always on them, but, you know, you're coaching, you're working with them. He's just got a different style. And I think that works for today's players.
You know, Brad, you said that he was your coach. I think it was 93, 94. And then, of course, you guys are partnered up in the teens. So Rick Bowness has had no problems in terms of lasting power. But how did you see his coaching style change from when he was your coach in Ottawa to the way he was? Obviously, he wasn't the head coach, but in Tampa.
Yeah, well, I think the whole game has changed. I think the players' mindset has definitely changed. The players back then, I think there was a too much fun, maybe. Maybe not enough focus on the day-to-day life of being a professional athlete on some guys, some play cases. Not saying that was for everybody, but I think the players in today's game are tremendous athletes and tremendously dedicated to the game, very focused, take care of themselves. And as far as coaching, you want to make sure you give these players every opportunity to have success. And I think Rick does a lot of things like that where guys can come to him. He makes guys comfortable around him. You know, when your team is comfortable, your team enjoys coming to the rink, you know you're going to get the best out of them.
Brad Lauer, Winnipeg Jets assistant coach, is our guest. Saturday morning, you're watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Now, Brad, you're obviously making that adjustment from head coach to assistant coach.
Yeah.
What needs to change from how you approach the day-to-day in the new role versus what you were in Edmonton?
Yeah, no, for sure. But, I think one thing for me coming back to being a head coach, I think I understand more what head coaches go through. I maybe didn't understand that prior to these last 4 years of, even though I was in junior hockey, there's still a demand and still stuff pressure on head coaches. And, I maybe didn't see that when I was in the NHL last time as an assistant coach of the day-to-day challenges that head coaches go through. And I think I respect that a lot more of what is demand on them. I think also with Rick, I believe he includes everybody. He wants everybody to have a say. He wants everyone to have a voice. He wants you to coach. He wants you to teach. He wants to make sure we're all on the same page. And I still think he gives you that freedom for me to still be able to do that. And, for me, it's as a coach, obviously I've been an assistant coach before, just the support, you have your input, but the decision is get your head coach and you support that decision. And you take that to the players and then you go to work.
Brad, one of the things that, this Jets team had a lot of expectation last year and they didn't quite meet that. And, it sounds like, and we don't know, and it looks like they're going to run back quite a large number of the guys next year. But of course, it's a whole new coaching staff, essentially, right? Yeah. So from that clean slate, what is the opportunity from your perspective? Like when you saw that this job was offered to you, what kind of opportunity did you see working with this Jets group? How do you see these guys in terms of being able to make hay? I mean, obviously, you didn't join because you don't want to win a Stanley Cup. That's your goal. So how did you see that from that perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I've been obviously these last 3 years for, it doesn't matter what league or what level of hockey you played, and it hasn't been fun, to say the least. We've been very fortunate in the Western League. During the lockout, we played 23 games. We were in a little bit of a bubble. Our players were only allowed to travel to their billets and home and then back to the rink. And then we tried to make it as comfortable as much as possible. It was still tough on them. It was still demanding on them. I think that happened with a lot of NHL teams. Those are tough couple of years to go through. With COVID and you're locked in a little bit and it's a little bit different and things aren't going well. I just don't think some teams perform to their potential. And I was fortunate enough to, in the bubble here, to go to a lot of the games that Edmonton Oilers were playing. And I got to watch Winnipeg play an awful lot. I really liked how a lot of their players on their team, how they play, the type of game they were playing at the time. And I think there's a lot of skill. There's a lot of young, good players on this team. That was very attractive to me. When looking at this opportunity, and I still think it's there. I really do. And I truly believe Rick is a guy that can take that and get that back out of these guys that they had, 3-4 years ago. I just think these last 3 years, very, very tough for some teams. Maybe it was one of Winnipeg's team, but we're not going to look back at what happened. The group here moving forward it's all about now and moving this team forward.
Brad Lauer, Winnipeg Jets assistant coach, our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Do you have much familiarity with some of the players that you're now going to be coaching on the Jets, like personal interaction with them, or just sort of arm's length kind of relationship?
Yeah, pretty much arm's length relationship. I mean, obviously, like I said, I got to watch some of the practices when I was here in Edmonton. I actually recorded a few of them for our group. if you're not if you're not stealing drills, you're not coaching. So, that was some of the stuff that we did here in Edmonton, being in the bubble. We were able to watch a lot of teams practice and stuff like that. So, I got to see a lot of these players practice and obviously play while they were in town here. But it's more of an arm's length. And as we get into town here, it'll get closer and closer with a bunch of the guys here.
We were talking with Marty Johnston earlier on the program, and he said that, you guys have spoken, the assistant coaches, but you haven't all got together. When you get together for that first time, and you try and build that camaraderie because you have familiarity, obviously, with with Rick, and I'm not sure about your familiarity with Scott Arneil. But how does the coaching staff go about and sort of building that brotherhood to maximize your effectiveness?
Well, I think it's personalities too. I think I know Scotty. You know, I know Flair's. We've all met at some time in our career, whether we're coaching or playing. I think there's a little, obviously every coach that's coming and has ideas and philosophies and stuff like that. And I think one thing is, early conversation, we want to have a lot of dialogue right away about systems, about, strategies and stuff like that. I think we'll put everything on the table and see what we can come up with. But that'll be the start of the relationship and building, that coaching chemistry.
Brad, you're a guy from Saskatchewan. So what does it mean to you to be, setting up in your NHL roots here in Winnipeg and getting a chance to, like you said, folks in Manitoba really were geared for the last couple of years on this team being a championship team. They still think that there's a potential for that. You've got a goalie like Connor Hellebuyck. So from a roots perspective, from your family perspective, what does it mean to just be so close to home and yet still coaching in the NHL?
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, obviously coming here in Edmonton, it's, coming back here, we've never been in, our family was never here in Canada for almost 11 years prior to coming. I spent 4 years in Anaheim, another 3.5 in Tampa. We didn't have any winter clothes when we came back from Florida. Those were our last two cities, and I was like, next thing you know, everyone was out buying Canada Goose stuff and staying warm. But so it was good to come back here, and you got to see your family. It's good. We had, unfortunately, my early career in coaching, my kids are a little older now, but we didn't have that drop them off at grandma's house or my cousin's house to or my sister's house to babysit. We always had to find a babysitter, so it's kind of neat to come back to your roots, and you have that connection with your family that you haven't had for quite some time. I have a feeling tickets will be a bother, will be a pain.
You'll have friends and family coming out of the woodwork that missed all those babysitting calls.
Lots of text messages. Yeah, by the way, I live in Winnipeg now. By the way, I haven't heard from you in 25 years either. But no, it's all cool. I think it's cool just to have friends and family around you. And now, reaching out to people you haven't heard from in a long time, you had a relationship back as a childhood. I think this is cool. For me and our family, we're very excited about it.
44 goals scored in your NHL career, Brad. One of them was in Winnipeg. Do you remember that at all?
In Winnipeg or in Long Island? I know I scored on Long Island.
Maybe it was against Winnipeg on Long Island.
It was a shorthanded goal, I believe one of them was.
There you go.
Yeah, so I think one was a shorthanded goal.
Do you remember most of those 44 goals? Is that just something?
Not a lot of goals.
I know, but still,
I had 17 in 1 year, so it was like, I think it was Long Island, the one I was shorthanded. I created a turnover, and I just took a quick shot and went in off the crossbar and in, but I'm not sure if, I can't remember if I scored in Winnipeg.
It could be, I got it on my second screen.
I know I had my rookie thing in Winnipeg, which I don't like those memories of back then.
I was going to say, can you tell any of those stories? Might not be able to be shared.
And it wasn't a meal, which I wish it was.
Yeah.
But what I remember in Winnipeg, in the old barn.
the bad old days, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I hear you.
But no, it's, you know what? One thing I do, Winnipeg always had fantastic ice. Like all the players talked about when we came to Winnipeg, the ice was great. It was like, oh man, you feel like you're gliding, you can skate forever. Always had tremendous ice in that old barn there.
Well, if we can't make ice here in Winnipeg, then something fundamentally has gone wrong with that.
Yeah.
Brad Lauer is one of the new assistant coaches of the Winnipeg Jets. Brad, congratulations again. Thanks, appreciate guys. Your time. Appreciate you joining us this morning. And only about another, you know, maybe 7, maybe 8 weeks till we're back at it for the start of training camp.
It's coming quick. Looking forward to it. We want to get settled in there and get going here.
I was going to say, when are you planning on making your way into town?
Hopefully by mid-August. Trying to find a place to live right now, and then hopefully get something settled up here this week, and then maybe back and forth a couple of times, but I would like to get in there by the mid-August.
Well, we have a moving company that sponsors our show, and we have a realtor that sponsors our show.
Okay, so perfect.
If you need any help, just let us know and we'll hook you up.
Are they all free?
Hey, how can you tell Brad's already a Winnipegger?
I got some farmer in me. That's me right here. I grew up on a farm, so the crops are good, but they're not in the bin yet.
Excellent. Brad, thank you so much. Have a great Saturday.
Okay, guys, take care.
Appreciate it. There he goes. Brad Lauer, the newest assistant coach of the Winnipeg Jets, joining us here on the program. A great conversation with both Brad. A great conversation earlier with Marty Johnston. Really fun talking to these assistant coaches, because to your point, Dave, we don't often hear from the assistant coaches at the NHL level. You know that they do their thing. You know that they, you see them on ice behind the bench, you see them at practice, but you don't often get to have that sort of interaction with them like we've had been able to do today. So big thank you to both of Brad and Marty, and of course, Scott Brown with the Winnipeg Jets PR staff for hooking that up with us this morning.
Yeah, no, and look, I think folks can be pessimistic, but you can also be optimistic, and you can hope that there is the word I used was a clean slate, or words, I should say. And I think, I watched the movie Bad Words last night, so I should know all about that.
What's the movie Bad Words?
Really? You never saw it? It's a, what's his name? Oh, God. Jason, what's his name?
Siegel?
Oh, God. No. It's not Jason. Oh, God. Now it's totally escaping me.
It's really a remarkable
Bateman,
movie.
Jason Bateman. So, anyways, it's about spelling. It's funny, but anyways, the point is, it is a clean slate for 22-23. We don't know, what this team will look like. Again, there's a lot of question marks still ahead for this Winnipeg Jets club, which of course you'll be able to find all the answers to, or the questions at least, on illegalcurve.com. But I think there's a reason. I think there's Rick Bowness seems to command a lot of respect, and that is the one thing that if you couldn't get Barry Trotz, Rick Bowness doesn't seem like a bad option. Now, look, some people might, and we'll see. I don't know. But he seemed to be able to get, buy-in from guys in Dallas, the Jamie Benns and the Tyler Sagans, and reducing their ice time.
And the young guys.
Reducing their ice time, getting the Jason Robertsons, getting those guys. And Jets fans remember Jason Robertson and his hat trick against Winnipeg. Yeah. So I think, if you're a Jets organization wanting to see, have some optimism, it's that you have a new coaching staff, a new philosophy, new systems in place, same team maybe. But again, if you can have defense that actually plays defense within a structure and a world-class goaltender who's not going to be overworked, he's going to play a lot. Don't get me wrong. He's still going to play 60-something games. But the fact is, you might actually have something in this team. Look, you might not be scoring 7 goals a game. Kyle Connor might not score 50 next year. But if the Jets win the majority of their games, they win 50, 60 games. Are you really going to complain that Kyle Connor isn't a 50 goal scorer? Kyle Connor doesn't care. He's already got his contract.
Well, you mentioned Jason Robertson. He got certainly in the 40s last year, it's not like he stifles players. Jason Robertson, 41 goals last year. So if it means that the Jets get 41 goals in advance or Connor gets 41 instead of whatever it ended up with, and it would have been closer to 50 had he not had the injuries and everything.
The COVID thing knocked him out, unfortunately.
Exactly. If it means 41 and the team's a playoff team, I think people will accept that trade-off. And, how many times last year when we had, when we talked to Craig Button, did he say that, coaching, better coaching would make all the difference for this Winnipeg Jets team? Now, I'm on record as saying I thought and still do think there should have been some more changes to this Winnipeg Jets team. That running it back isn't how I would have approached it, and that seems to be the way they're going about it. I wouldn't have been the way I would have done it. I would have been a little bit more active, maybe proactive when it comes to a Pierre-Luc Dubois situation, depending on what happens there, whatever it might be. But better coaching and new coaching could very well change the fortunes of this Winnipeg Jets team. But if it doesn't, and you'll know within the first 30 to 40 games, and by then it'll probably be too late. If better coaching, because you're going to get a better quality of coaching from Rick Bowness than you saw last year. If it doesn't change things, well, then you know that it's time for the full-fledged on rebuild. You can't, you can't be, you know, you can't be wavering after that 40 game mark. You sort of know what you're going to have. Just a matter of, you know, the Jets, you know, Bowness is going to put forth his systems. You have some new, fresh voices and some fresh eyes behind the bench alongside him. Now it's on the players to react to the coaching that they're getting. And if they react in the same way that they saw last year, well, then you know that it has to be torn down and rebuilt. Are they, you know, it's going to continue to be fascinating. And we'll see if the offseason, I see a comment, you know, in the chat that the offseason isn't over yet. And you're right. There still could be more changes happening. But to me, at this point, it would be a little bit of a surprise because as we both well know, for the most part, Dave, once August hits, the entire NHL basically shuts down for that, that solid 3 or 4 week period. There's a little, you know, some small moves here, some small moves there, but it's not a, it's not a really active time of the year for in the NHL world. Once the calendar clicks into August.
No, I mean, you're 100% right. I mean, it's not just me who explores MB. It's the, entire, entire
everybody's
NHL.
Up there calling.
I don't think they're all exploring MB, but they're doing their own thing and they're, you're right. I mean, it's generally a time to say, okay, we need, I need a break at minimum. So let's put it this way. I'll be up in Crow Duck Lake fishing. I'm not saying what day. You might be seeing me fishing up there. Great pickerel fishing, as folks know, but that's what people do.
As far as I know, you just made up the name of a lake that I've never heard of before.
No, it's right behind Big White Shell and the White Shell. It's a back lake, but it's incredible fishing. It's you hit your limit every time. I got the spot there. I figured it out after a couple of years. So it's a good little spot to do some pickerel fishing. The point is that that's what you do. You go into relaxation mode. You go into chill mode. You go into, you know, like training camp. Like, you know, Brad just said, and Marty would talk about it. People see you're in the NHL. You're staying in fantastic five-star hotels. You're flying everywhere. It can still be a grind. And when you're not having fun, it can be even more of a grind. So ultimately, like I said, you know, this is about introducing new elements to this team, whether it's structures, whether it's just a concept of fun. Like, that's why I said, regardless of what impact Naismith, I mean, again, Naismith's contract is atrocious. Nobody likes that contract, but Naismith, the person, what he brings to this group. I mean, we've interviewed him. I've interviewed him. We've interviewed him on the show. I mean, ultimately, that's what this team needs, is to return to the fact that hockey is supposed to be fun. So if you're having a lot more fun with it and you're enjoying yourself, you know what? I mean, I think that's not necessarily a bad thing for this group. And again, I think that's something that we're going to see from a new mindset and a new possibility. So, I mean, I think that's very good for the Jets. And guess what? Guess what other team might have a new mindset?
Put on your antlers. It's time for the Manuk Moose Minute on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
It's literally 10:59. What Moose Minute are you doing?
Well, I'm going to do the Moose Minute because I've got a minute, Drew, in which do it. But I'm not going to do it because, of course, the Jets aren't the only team that made some moves this week. The Moose also made some moves. We have signing news. We've got new coaches, of course, because with Marty Johnston moving, you've got some new coaches on the bench. For Manitoba, Nolan Baumgartner, of course, one of the all-time best well-known, you know, games leader behind Jimmy Roy. But he's the games leader for the AHL Moose, not necessarily the IHL, AHL iterations of the Moose. But Nolan Baumgartner, he was rumored potentially to be on the Jets staff. He ultimately signs to be with the Moose. So he's going to be there. And Alex Matheson, he's going to be the new video coach. Have to give a very special shout out to Richard Bowie, who is the video coach for the Manitoba Moose. Some Moose fans will know him. He was on the bench. Just a phenomenal, phenomenal person. One of the nicest guys you will ever meet in hockey. Probably one of the reasons why I loved going to Moose games, because I would have the opportunity to talk to Richard during the intermissions. But he's returning back east to be closer to family after being with the Manitoba Moose organization. Dealt with a lot in his life, and he's just a phenomenal person. So you got to wish him all the best in whatever he's going to do next. But just wanted to give him a shout out because he's just a great guy. And again, like I said, so Alex Matheson's going to take over him. The Moose have this conduit to Ottawa because all these guys have connections to the University of Ottawa, or they're from Ottawa, and that's where Alex is from. So he comes in, he'll be the new Moose video coach. And Drew, not only that, but the Moose also, if you recall, or you don't recall, they released their 72-game schedule. The full 72-game schedule has been released. The Moose, a lot of games. You've got the new Calgary franchise. For whatever reason, we don't know what their name is going to be because they're just – it's kind of like when the Jets came back and they were just Winnipeg. Well, that's I'm serious. That's what the AHL has just listed them as Calgary. So they may be the Heat. They may not be the Heat. That's not necessarily certain. And then ultimately there was one signing. Isaac Johnson signed a one-year deal. And then the Moose confirmed Evan Cormier and Thomas Caron. They actually signed two-year deals last year. For whatever reason, I don't even remember why. They were never announced. So Evan Cormier is a goaltender. He'll be back, of course, he's got one more year. I suspect he'll be in the ECHL and called up when needed. And then Thomas Caron, big boy from Quebec, physical player, and he's back for another season with the Moose. So there's your Moose minutes.
There you go, Dave M, to wrap up this Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Want to say a big thank you to all the sponsors of Illegal Curve who make this show, who make the post-game show. They make the website a possibility. Our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Zappia Group, Realty, Betway, Bernstein's Deli, Tough Duck, Boston Pizza, Seagram's, Rolly's Transfer, and Grid Park. Support these fine businesses because of their continued support of Illegal Curve Hockey. If you haven't already done so, smash the like button, subscribe to the YouTube channel, tell your friends, tell your family the best place to be every Saturday morning, and after every Winnipeg Jets game is the Illegal Curve YouTube channel. A big thank you to Marty Johnston, a big thank you to Brad Lauer, both of them assistant coaches for the Winnipeg Jets for this coming season. We appreciate them joining us on this Saturday morning. Dave and I will be back next Saturday.
Alex wants to know if we're going to be back on Monday, Drew.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens on Monday, and then we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. After Pierre-Luc Dubois, of course, speaks to the media, he signed his one-year deal with the Winnipeg Jets. That will be covered in its entirety on illegalcurve.com, so be sure to check it out there on Monday, and of course, keep the website handy for all your latest Winnipeg Jets, Manitoba Moose, and Winnipeg Ice news. Dave and I will be back next Saturday, the season finale of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show before we take August off. Be sure to join us next Saturday at 9 a.m. For Dave Minook, whose head is on fire, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel, follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, illegalcurve.com.